Welcome, everybody. My name is David Summerhayes, and this is the Forging Purpose podcast. This podcast focuses on the modern crisis of meaning. And like I said, season one features interviews with ordinary people and also experts on the front lines of the crisis of meaning. Now, today is a special bonus episode because I was re-watching my interview with Myrna, and it just brought up more questions for me to pitch back at the question queen. I wanted to ask Myrna a few more personal questions about aging and just what's been the most meaningful thing for her in her life over the 90 years that she's been on this planet. So without any further ado, let's dive into that. I think you're really going to enjoy this. You were saying it's natural for people to seek a kind of satisfaction, but I was wondering if you think, like, objectively, in other words, from the point of view of, let's say, the universe, is it like a cold, unfeeling universe that doesn't care either way, whether we find meaning or not? Or do you think the universe, like, kind of ultimately cares?
David, that is an interesting question that I don't know the answer to. And I can't answer it because I don't know. And I think where my head goes is to climate change. And the universe certainly cares about the change in climate and has made that known. Whether that would be meaning, I think you'd have to ask someone else about that. I don't know.
The universe does care about climate change. The universe doesn't care whether we have meaning or not, but it does care about climate change. Good to know. So the universe is an environmentalist. Well, this has been educational already.
I don't know.
And how do you, like, we're all, it could all be over any time, but, you know, at age 90, it's like it must feel so close. So how do you feel about, like, I'm asking you about the universe,
about
does it care
dying?
Or not? And yeah.
Sure. I've given it a lot of thought. Here's my wish: to go to bed one night and die in the middle of the night and not wake up. I'm over.
Yeah.
I see it as a no. Not so much as a passage, because if it's a passage, you're going somewhere. So, I read this book once called The Man Who Died by Kazantzakis. And in there, he's a leader who's been assassinated, and it's all about the train trip as he... You've read it?
No.
Okay. All about the train trip as he goes through the country. It's a beautifully written book. And at the end, he's being cremated. And what he said... And he's talking to everyone. And he talks about the pain of saying goodbye and how awful it is. And then there's this transition where he joins the air like a molecule. And he's euphoric. That would be my wish. My gut reaction is, it's over, I'll be finished and done with, and that's the end. So, no more thought, no more interactions, and no more pain. But in the meantime, it gives, and I don't know if this is the right word, valence. I don't even know what that means. If you know that an ending is near, you appreciate much more what you see, plants, flowers, nature, relationships because you don't know how long you've got. So that's kind of how I see it. I'm valuing what's precious.
Party time.
Party time.
Nice. So you said you have kind of like a, I hope the hereafter is like this kind of ecstatic oneness with things around you, that kind of thing. That's what I understood. And then your gut feeling is it's just kind of over.
No, I wouldn't call it that way. I would call it not hope, but pleasure in the imagination. And the other is acceptance. Acceptance. I'll have had my time. I'm just hope I keep, while I'm here, first of all, my cognition, and secondly, my ability to move.
Speaking of like kind of what you're hoping for, but kind of transitioning there, like what sort of, you've done like so many things. You've done, like, you've written a book, you've had a couple of careers, been married, had kids. Like, what's the most meaningful thing at 90 years old in your life?
I think the most meaningful thing is First John, and then my kids, and not quite the intensity, but close. John's kids, grandkids. Yeah. What else is meaningful, and what I'll miss when I croak, is music. So those, you asked for the most, and you wanted one, but being able to perform, having piano lessons with Vincent, but really also the 10 minutes we get of his playing, that enriches my life tremendously.
Okay, so more the relationship. Well, first, what first comes to you is the relationship side of things, a lot more than like things you've accomplished. Relationships. Yeah. And then.
Yeah, that's great.
People you
helped.
That's
nice.
You've helped a lot of people, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then second comes to mind is, yeah, like kids, grandkids. And then you were mentioning, like, yeah, these great moments of sort of music, of, yeah, enjoying music and performing music.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, legacy, so that would be, yeah, just that you're, you know, remembered in these relationships, I guess.
I am a student at best of neuropsychoanalysis. One of the things I've learned is genetically things get passed down from one generation to the next. And I'm hoping what I've passed down will have meaning, if you will, to my kids. So that's, if I've touched people that way and influenced them as I believe I've been influenced. But a memory my father told me, his history is enough to make one give up. He was orphaned by both parents at age 2 in Poland in an anti-Semitic world, lived with ultra-Hasidic uncle that he hated, okay? he never heard any music. And when he was about 4 or 5, he was able to go to a wedding, and he heard a violinist. And what he did, David, is he went up and put his hand on the violin.
Okay, so he loves music.
Oh, man.
Just
that's
how,
you know, we didn't have money, but every Sunday, all 5 of us kids would jump into my parents' bed. My mother wasn't around, and we would sing for a couple of hours. We listened to the radio. I could tell the difference between Yasha Heifetz and Yehudi Menuhin. Because Heifetz had a brilliance. Yeah.
In playing violin.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You don't know who those people are.
Yeah.
Because you're young, you're a baby.
I also don't play violin. Yeah. So, thank you again, Dr. Myrna Orenstein. I was re-listening to that first interview and just thinking, I have a few questions left to ask her, and I'm so glad I called her back and got her on the line so I could share this all with you. So I'm really struck from that conversation, first of all, to learn that the universe is an environmentalist for Myrna. I'm just joking, but I thought that was an interesting thought, that the universe, you know, reacts to, let's say, climate change. The world feels the consequences of our action, and they have consequences back for us, for other species and things like that. So yeah, the world isn't just uncaring or indifferent to our actions. It really does respond to us. So in that sense, our decisions really are meaningful. I also really like the way Myrna described pleasure for the imagination, that the beliefs we have about what happens when we die, they don't have to be true. They can be fun, and it can put us in a good mood and in a good place. Yeah, we'll talk more in the second season of the Forging Purpose podcast about religion. So we'll be coming back a lot to this idea of afterlife and the myths around that and things like that. But yeah, really interesting to hear Myrna's reflections at age 90 about death, which I'm sure, you know, is a subject that's just come up a lot in her thinking. But I think the most inspiring thing from this bonus episode has been just how precious things are for Myrna, what I called party time. She was saying that as she ages, you know, every moment, everything she can enjoy is worth just so much. And the thought that it's near her last or anything like that helps her really savor it a little bit more. That's really inspiring, I think, for any of us to take more time to savor many of the good things that are around us every day. So, final thank you to Myrna, and we'll see you in the next one.